Hello, this is Sharon, and I'll be bringing you the pantograph for today, which is Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. Of course, as always, we will begin on the front page of the paper. The first article is entitled County Board Delays Reopening Plan Vote. The McLean County Board on Tuesday night postponed voting on a plan to reopen McLean County to allow the County Board of Health to weigh in on the matter. But even as the board delayed a vote until a special meeting of the board at 5:30 p.m., May 28th, some members said it was time for businesses to reopen in spite of COVID-19 cases continuing to rise in McLean County. "I think it's important to get our businesses open as fast as we can," said member George Wendt. "Small businesses are having a difficult time, and the longer the quarantine, the more problems with mental health," he said. Member Jim Soldner said the small businesses are hurting, especially in rural areas. The board had been expected to vote on a staged implementation plan for the Heart of Illinois subregion, which could result in 11 central Illinois counties reopening sooner than the larger North Central region established by Governor J.B. Pritzker. But board member Chuck Erickson, who was to call for the vote Tuesday night, agreed to delay the vote until the special meeting to give the McLean County Board of Health a chance to weigh in on the plan. Seven board members wrote to the county clerk requesting the special meeting, triggering Board Chairman John McIntyre, as allowed by state statute and county board rules, to call the special meeting. Meanwhile, the Board of Health called a special meeting to discuss the plan for 5:30 p.m. Thursday. Erickson favors the HOI plan and told the Pantograph earlier Tuesday, "We had 10 votes to move the HOI plan. To get to that 11th vote of the 20-member board, some members wanted it to go to the Health Department and Board of Health first." "I'm not conceding anything," Erickson said. "We're sending it to the Health Department to say, how can we implement this in McLean County? That's really what's going on here." McIntyre said, "Right now, I'm supporting the HOI plan. I wanted to give our Board of Health a chance to review the governor's plan and the HOI plan and time for our state legislators to review this." During the board meeting, State's Attorney Don Knapp said the Board of Health should weigh in on the matter because the Illinois Department of Public Health and local health departments have statutory authority regarding isolation and quarantine, including as it impacts the shuttering of businesses. The Board of Health has total operational control of the County Health Department, Knapp said. "There's nothing operationally that the county board can do to force the health department to do something," Knapp said. In addition, board members said they want to see what would happen with the COVID-19 drive-through testing site at the McLean County Fairgrounds. That testing site, which has been open since March 28th, is scheduled to close at 5 p.m. Friday. The board approved sending a letter drafted by member Josh Barnett to the Illinois Department of Public Health and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, asking that the testing site remain open. "Continued testing is critical to any reopening plan," several members said. Board member Carlo Robustelli encouraged the Health Department to develop a local testing plan. Member Elizabeth Johnston asked that any replacement site allow walk-up testing. Asked earlier Tuesday why he supported the HOI plan, McIntyre said there is a large majority of people in this county who feel businesses need to be open sooner. The HOI plan calls for separating out Peoria, Tazewell, Woodford, Fulton, Marshall, Stark, McLean, Livingston, Bureau, Putnam, and LaSalle counties from the governor's North Central region, which basically includes the northwest quadrant of Illinois, with the McLean County at the southeast corner. The governor's plan splits the state into four regions, allowing each to slowly reopen based on several factors, including COVID-19 infection rates and available hospital beds. But the detailed Heart of Illinois plan indicates that the 11-county subregion could potentially open sooner because the area benefits from high levels of medical services per capita and sufficient surge capacity to manage an increase in COVID-19 patients. The HOI plan calls for reopening based on data, including healthcare, hospital bed and equipment availability, testing capacity, and community engagement. While the plan got mixed reviews during last week's board, executive committee, and Board of Health meetings, McIntyre said the HOI plan makes sense. The counties that already are meeting the metrics can move forward, McIntyre said. It's a better plan for us to follow right now, considering the number of people we have out of work. During the meeting, the board heard that it had received 54 communications from residents, 27 regarding reopening McLean County, 6 regarding jail inmate privileges, and 21 calling for a housing plan for individuals who test positive for COVID-19 but can't isolate those who are asymptomatic but need to quarantine because they've been exposed to COVID-19, and those who live in congregate but high-risk settings such as jail. In other business, the county board voted 15-4, with McIntyre not voting, to freeze the salary of the circuit clerk at $105,290 through December 31, 2024, freeze the salary of the coroner at $100,324 through 2024, and lower the salary of the auditor from $100,302 to $80,600 through 2024. Member William Casely voted no, saying the current economic conditions caused by COVID-19 wouldn't last 4 years. Casely, Went, and members Lindsay Bloomfield and William Frederick voted no. The board also approved expanding the Bloomington Normal Enterprise Zone to accommodate expansion of the Ferraro Candy Factory at 2501 Beck Road, Bloomington, which will add 50 employees to the current workforce. Approved ordinances abating taxes on property purchased by Rivian Automotive and Brandt Industries after learning that both businesses had met payroll obligations in project development agreements. Police prefer compliance over charges. Misdemeanor for business violation up to state's attorney. Tension is high as business owners become increasingly restless for reopening, despite threats of potential misdemeanor charges. We sympathize with a lot of these businesses and the position they're in, said McLean County Sheriff John Sandage. Of course, we want everybody to be safe, social distancing, wearing their masks, and things of that nature. But these people need to make a living. Business owners could face a Class A misdemeanor charge if found in violation of Governor J.B. Pritzker's stay-at-home order under a new rule issued last week. Under Illinois state law, a Class A misdemeanor charge carries a fine of $75 to $2,500. The order targets restaurants and bars with dine-in or self-serve areas, gyms, pools, and nail and hair salons. Businesses may continue with curbside or delivery services outlined in the original executive order. Local health departments are to coordinate with Illinois State Police and local law enforcement to enforce the rule, but sheriffs and police chiefs across the state say official charges will have to come from local state attorneys, some of whom have already said they will not enforce the state order. Sandage and the Bloomington and Normal police chiefs said they intend to continue to seek voluntary compliance and will leave it up to the McLean County State's Attorney's Office to decide whether it's appropriate to charge businesses that violate the order. McLean County State's Attorney Don Knapp said he is not commenting on enforcing the new penalty until he has seen or read an official order, which he said he had not received as of Tuesday. Given everything that is going on, I think our approach to that is if we receive a complaint, we will go out and we'll meet with the appropriate individuals to determine if, in fact, the business is open, said Normal Police Chief Rick Bleichner. If the business is deemed non-essential, Bleichner said, the department will forward a report to the state's attorney's office for review. Bloomington Police Chief Dan Donath said his department is taking a similar approach, but is not changing any current procedures. When the pandemic hit, we instructed our officers that if they had a low-level nonviolent offense, they are to write a report and refer it to the state's attorney's office so they can do a notice to appear for a court date at a later date, he said. A business that fails to remain open under provisions of the governor's order would be considered a low-level nonviolent offense. In DeWitt County, Sheriff Mike Walker said his agency will respond to any calls regarding businesses violating the order, but the goal is to gain voluntary compliance. His office will work with the state's attorney if necessary, he added. We're not going to be in and actually take somebody to jail, said Walker. It's requiring us to take some form of action, and we've got several options we can do. Bleichner and Donath said their departments have gotten voluntary compliance so far and haven't had to take any other enforcement action. Bleichner said Normal police have contacted 10 to 12 businesses after receiving complaints from some people who felt the establishments should not be open under the governor's order. That doesn't mean they are all founded complaints. That just means those were ones that people told us weren't following proper procedures or were open when they shouldn't have been open, said Bleichner. Those businesses ran the gamut, everything from smoke shops that thought they were essential because they sold products other than just tobacco, to gyms, to restaurants that people felt weren't completely complying with the requirements, to even large box stores that people felt might not have been following the proper guidelines, said Bleichner. Bloomington had a couple of smoke shops that during the first week or two that the governor's order took effect, didn't think they had to close, said Donath. We gave them a cease and desist letter, and they worked it out with city legal officials about whether they qualified under the governor's order as an essential business or not, said Donath. So we haven't had to refer anything to the state's attorney's office yet. Walker said law enforcement agencies are being placed in a difficult position, balancing people's rights and the restrictions outlined in the governor's order. As I've said before, we do still have a constitution, said Walker. Some of these things people feel are overreaching of our constitutional rights, and we're trying to do a balancing act by getting compliance and also keeping people safe. Sandage said the overall situation threatens the relationship between law enforcement and the public. Our department works very hard to have good relationships with the public and citizens, he said. The governor is putting us in a bad position when we've built up trust with our communities and have a cooperative atmosphere. He said that there is some consequences businesses can face from the state if they do attempt to reopen or to remain open. Our concern is what the state can do to those businesses as far as taking liquor licenses, food licenses, gaming licenses, and things like that, said Sandage. That's the hammer that the state has on those businesses. True or false? Today's Flick Fact. Mother Nature has made it easier to stay inside during this sheltering in place. And the answer? Well, in central Illinois, you'd have to say yes, that's true. Since April 1st, weather records show that it has rained on 29 days, been mostly sunny only 4 of those days, and has averaged 15 degrees below normal. Today is Wednesday, May 20th, and it's the 141st day of 2020. We have 225 days left in this year. Today's highlight, on May 20th, 1961, a white mob attacked a busload of freedom riders in Montgomery, Alabama, prompting the federal government to send in U.S. Marshals to restore order. On this date in 1506, explorer Christopher Columbus died in Spain. In 1873, Levi Strauss and tailor Jacob Davis received a U.S. patent for men's work pants made with copper rivets. In 1899, taxi driver Jacob German was pulled over and arrested by a police officer for riding a bicycle for speeding down Manhattan's Lexington Avenue in his electric car at 12 miles an hour, when the speed limit was 8 miles per hour. It was the first recorded speeding arrest in U.S. history. In 1927, Charles Lindbergh took off from Roosevelt Field on Long Island, New York, aboard the Spirit of St. Louis on his historic solo flight to France. In 1932, Amelia Earhart took off from Newfoundland to become the first woman to fly solo across the Atlantic. Because of weather and equipment problems, Earhart set down in Northern Ireland instead of her intended destination of France. In 1939, regular transatlantic mail service began as a Pan American Airways plane, the Yankee Clipper, took off from Port Washington, New York, bound for Marseille, France. In 1948, Chiang Kai-shek was inaugurated as the first president of the Republic of China, Taiwan. And a thought for today from Honoré de Balzac, a French author who was born on this day in 1799 and died in 1850. A flow of words is a sure sign of duplicity. Well, that gives you something to think about. And how time flies locally from the past pages of the pantograph. 100 years ago, on May 20th, 1920, the YMCA is fixing up a 10-acre plot of land to be known as Camp Johnson. It is 10 miles west of town, and Farmer Johnson has leased it to the Y for reasonable terms. The boys' camp will have ball diamonds, a lodge, and tenting area, all hopefully by this summer. 75 years ago, on May 20th, 1945, Mr. and Mrs. Marshall Johnson of Bloomington received word that their son Paul was killed in action on Okinawa. Sergeant Johnson was born in Normal, but later became a farmer in Iowa. His parents have gone to Iowa to bring his wife and sons back to Bloomington. 50 years ago, May 20th, 1970, an estimated 400 to 500 construction workers entered the ISU campus intent on raising the flag to full staff. It had been lowered by students observing the birthday of Malcolm X, creating a community crisis. Campus vehicles formed a protective circle around the flagpole. And 25 years ago, May 20th, 1995, Janet Williamson received her nursing degree at Heartland Community College's graduation. Her daughter, Sheila Geither, cheered her from the audience. Geither is also a recent nursing graduate. Mom works at St. Joseph. Daughter is looking for a job. College expects deficit to jump. Because of assistance from the federal government through the CARES Act, Heartland Community College is projecting a smaller deficit than originally anticipated for fiscal 2020. However, the deficit could jump significantly in fiscal years 2021 and 2022, the Board of Trustees was told Tuesday night during a virtual meeting. Meanwhile, President Keith Cornille said he hopes to announce plans for the fall semester by the end of the month. The two key factors will be the safety of students and employees, as well as the ability to ensure a high quality of instruction, he said. Cornille expects a blend of online and in-person courses, with more classes offered online than in the past. Sarah Deal Hunt, Vice President of Enrollment and Student Services, said, "I'm not going to make any predictions for fall. There are too many variables in play." An expected decrease in enrollment is among reasons why a larger deficit is anticipated in the next fiscal year, according to Sam Overton, Interim Vice President for Finance and Administration. The college is planning for a probable decrease in tuition and continuing education revenue. The potential for increased delinquency in property tax receipts and possible decreases in state funding, said Overton. Cornille said the COVID crisis has thrown a bit of a wrinkle into the budget process. Overton said because the CARES Act will help the college recover some of its losses, such as refunds to students, and because of efforts to control expenses, the deficit for fiscal 2020 is expected to be about $255,000 rather than the nearly $507,000 they projected in January. However, the deficit for fiscal 2021 is projected to top $1 million. The college said its reserves are sufficient to cover the deficit through fiscal 2022, plus continued work on the budget could narrow the gap. Reserves are utilized to weather the ups and downs of enrollment, state funding, and unforeseen expenses. Unfortunately, we're seeing all three of them at the same time, Overton told the board. A tentative budget is expected to be presented at the board's June meeting with approval of the final budget in September. COVID claims second Woodford County life. The recent surge in COVID-19 cases in McLean County slowed on Tuesday, but a second Woodford County resident has died of the novel virus. Woodford County Health Department is saddened to announce a second Woodford County resident who had previously tested positive for COVID-19 has died, said Andrea Ingerson, Health Department Health Educator and Public Information Officer. This Woodford County resident was in her 90s and was not a resident of a long-term care facility. In Woodford County, 18 people have tested positive for COVID-19, 13 have recovered, 3 are in isolation, and 2 have died. Meanwhile, McLean County Health Department announced that 2 more people had tested positive for the novel virus. Neither of the 2 people are associated with Bloomington Rehabilitation and Health Center, said Dion McNeil, the county communications specialist. Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight last week identified an outbreak at that long-term care facility at 1925 South Main Street, Bloomington, which shared responsibility for the recent surge in cases. The 2 additional cases on Tuesday means that 189 people have had confirmed cases of COVID-19 in McLean County since March 19th. Of the 189, 46 people, 29 residents, and 17 staff are associated with Bloomington Rehabilitation and Health Center. 1 of the 17 staff people lives outside McLean County. The increase in the number of cases follows a surge of 17 new cases on Monday, 9 on Sunday, and 25 on Friday. Of the 189, 111 have recovered, 63 are at home in isolation, and 9 are hospitalized. 6 people have died, including 3 since Thursday. 3 of the 6 were residents of Bloomington Rehabilitation and Health Center. No new deaths were announced in McLean County on Tuesday. Meanwhile, COVID-19 drive-through testing continues from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily through Friday at the McLean County Fairgrounds, 1106 Interstate Drive, Bloomington. The Illinois Department of Public Health told the Pantograph that 235 people underwent testing on Monday, bringing to 6,002 the number of people who've been tested since that site opened on March 28th. Statewide, 1,545 additional COVID cases were announced by the Illinois Department of Public Health on Tuesday, and 146 additional deaths, including an Iroquois County man in his 60s. Since the virus hit Illinois earlier this year, 98,030 people have had confirmed cases, and 4,379 have died. We will take a short break now, and then I'll return for the second half of the Pantograph for Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. Please stay tuned.